Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Culinary Convo. This week, we are going over Top Chef Houston, Season 19, Episodes 5 and 6. And instead of going over it with somebody who's never seen it before, we are going over it with my lovely wife, Kaylee.
Hi.
Hi. Hey. So the only reason why you watch this show is mainly because I watched it.
Yeah, but yeah. It is really interesting. It's not one of those shows where you sit and watch it and then I do something else. Like, I really enjoy the show.
Yeah.
I like the competition-based reality shows, you know, where they have a talent that they show off, not like, you know, Real Housewives kind of shows where they just do stuff. Yeah. I like the talent and the competitiveness of Top Chef. And sometimes there's drama, so it works.
But lots of drama. The season with the pea soup.
Oh,
and the peas being taken.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was a huge deal.
And then season two.
Yeah.
That's in my head as like the most dramatic.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of lines that like I can't recite immediately, but super fans can, like, all the time. I know there's the one about what is it? Essentially, like, well, you were acting like a B word, I think, and like something like that. Anyway, lots of one-liners over time. Lots of famous chefs, personalities have been on the show. It's just a wonderful little, like, you know, show to just sit down and watch and see them cook. And they really amp it up to make you think, like, this is a huge deal. And in reality, it's like if they lose, almost none of them are like, my life is over.
Right.
That doesn't happen, right?
Right.
Like, it's kind of just like, oh, well, got to go back to my restaurant.
And then you see them in the future on like a show or,
you know,
a magazine or something. And you're like, haven't I seen them before?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So it's usually all good things for sure.
Yeah. So the first challenges that start are actually through the barbecue realm in episode 5. Warning, there are spoilers ahead if you haven't watched it. But another great article by Brittany Brito Garley of The Eater Houston talks about episode 5 brings the smoke and brisket for Houston Pitmasters. Definitely one of the more interesting episodes. Mainly because doing smoking pitmaster type stuff as like a hoity-toity fancy chef, you understand it, you know it, but putting it into practice is way harder.
Yeah.
You know, like that's pretty tough. The first challenge, the elimination round, part one, chefs are required to flip the script on Texas barbecue with a brisket dish, but they only have 30 minutes to trim, season, and put their briskets on the pits. Now, this is J Bar M Barbecue where they're doing this, and there's other pit masters that are going to be eating their barbecue and the dishes afterwards.
Yeah, so this is like a big deal.
Big deal. Yeah. And, oh, there's a lovely picture of all the little pit masters, and they're so excited. They're like, these fancy chefs are cooking for us, and we've cooked for them I don't know how many times. But, yeah, 12 hours on the smoker. And it says here, immediately the Southerners feel the pressure.
Oh,
Houston's
yeah.
Evelyn Garcia sends a prayer up to the brisket gods. Eager to represent Mississippi well, Chef Nick Wallace busts out more than a dozen spices and schools his counterparts on the basics of smoking brisket, fat side down, with the help of J Bar M Barbecue's pitmaster Willow Villarreal. Chefs load their peppery briskets on the pit, and they say peppery because although Mr. Nick Wallace pulls out a dozen spices, the thing that I know about, you know, Texas barbecue, salt and coarse black pepper. That is supposed to be like the only two things you throw on there. Like, yeah. If you do anything else to the meat, it's not that it's like sacrilege, but it's basically like you're trying to zhuzh it up, and you shouldn't be. Like, you need to make it simple.
You know? I mean, I will say just having steak with like some coarse salt is
just wonderful.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And so I would think that keeping it simple with, you know, this kind of meat, these big, big, big chunks of meat,
right,
slow cooking them for, you know, half a day.
Right.
You don't want to do too much to mess it up, you know.
No.
Just stick with the basics. You don't need to make it super duper fancy.
Right. Yeah, just stay simple, be close to your roots, and you'd be all right.
Be close to your boots?
No, your roots.
Oh, your roots.
Oh, my God.
Okay, well.
Anyway, so it says cue the record scratch because, you know, it's going to get kind of crazy. You got the quick fire. It says here that the quick fire challenge, judges announce a Texas toast challenge.
Oh, boy. Which,
yeah, me and Kaylee both agree. This challenge, there were, what, maybe two of them that actually
did? That did, like...
Yeah.
I'm not even from the South or anything, but I know Texas toast when I see it.
Yeah.
So, like, Dairy Queen's Texas toast? No, that's not it. Raising Cane's Texas toast.
Getting pretty close.
That's more what we're looking for here.
Right, right. And... basically, what they come out to, Nick Wallace's standout dish of the Texas toast was his BLT.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yeah, it was made with pancetta and a cheese spread. It looked amazing. Definitely something that if you're making Texas toast and you don't have much in the kitchen, doing their BLT version, yes, that's a good way to go. And, of course, the... ultimate chef, like, he should have his own show probably where they just throw him in a shark tank and have him grill underwater. Jackson Kalb came up with a sweet and salty shrimp toast with a balsamic chili jam, and he was in the top three with Nick Wallace and Joe Chan. And Joe Chan, she did a mushroom and arugula toast. But yeah, even Jackson Kalb's, It was Texas toast. It just was. It didn't look very fancy, like,
no,
you know.
But it looked better than some of the other
right. It had creations. The thickness of it.
Yeah,
a lot of them were like rolling it and trying to make it thin.
It's
and
supposed
it's like,
to be like a pillow,
right?
Just thick and fluffy. You can't like slice it super thin or roll it out. That's not how this works.
Right. That's not Texas toast.
No.
I mean, ugh.
This Oregonian would know.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
And then they go to the elimination round part two. Chefs return to their briskets as they finish up. It says here, you know, Villarreal, they list off all of the pitmasters of all these local barbecue places. Which, me growing up in the Midwest, quite a bit of barbecue places around my area in Southwest Missouri, St. Louis, Kansas City. I mean, you kind of know pit masters by, like, what hour of the day they wake up. And then on top of that, like, kind of really what their specialties are. So if it's their links or, you know, the brisket, what have you. And like I said, Missouri being in the Midwest, you kind of have every animal. You got chicken, turkey, pork, you know, beef.
Smoked turkey is really good.
Yeah.
Really
it's good. Amazing. And so it's interesting to see the Texas side because Texas, obviously, they're going beef.
Beef.
Yeah. They're beefing it up with everybody. So it's, you know,
are
kinda
you sure they're beefing it up?
They are.
They seem like they get along.
Well, the pitmasters do, yeah. Because they're kind of like, this isn't my money.
So there's no beef there.
No, but there is beef between the companies. that like who has a better sauce, who has a better mac, who has a better bean.
You got me there.
Yeah, they're going after it. But once again, lovely Jackson Kolb, he, quote, bastardizes the brisket by grinding it up and serving it with a stuffed scarpinock pasta with, scarpinach pasta, I believe, with cornbread crumbles and burnt ends.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
Very.
Just because when you have barbecue, it's the big piece of meat.
Right.
Not... like round sausage and it's turkey. Like,
why put it on a smoker and do all that if you're just going to grind it?
And put in a pasta.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Man. I thought from the get-go, I thought, man, he's doomed on this at least, right? But the judges call the brisket smoky and the barbecue sauce interesting. And you know, we get all the way to the bottom here. The biggest oops of the show was watch the episode again and you'll see the exact moment where barbecue snobs were likely blessing Shanti's heart for those hefty brisket slices. Yeah, pretty much. I like everything from the Texas toast to the brisket, to the dishes that were coming out, to even just like some of the things that like the judges were saying, all I could think was, where are the big cuts of meat on like, you know, like a sheet pan? Like that's what I'm looking for, is that. And they kept coming out with stuff that obviously is more high end, better plated, artistic.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm here for that. But I'm also, like, not there for that. It was, yeah. But it says the best turnaround was Luke Coplin, Mr. Noma.
Yeah.
He seemingly hasn't quite nailed the art of seasoning on the show just yet. The chef got off to a bland start this season, but redeemed himself by making flavorful Indian food. And the third episode that impressed even host Padma Lakshmi. In this episode, he overdoes it with a Texas toast that tastes like a salt lick.
Yeah.
But later redeems himself with a flavorful brisket served with a thick onion barbecue sauce.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
The winner was Garcia's brisket curry, which... given to Padma during an elimination round.
Risky.
Risky.
Very risky.
Very risky. And she is from Houston, Garcia. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, a lot of screw-ups could have happened here and didn't. She nailed it. She did it with a pickled vegetable and burnt ends crumble, and she wowed the judges. Colicchio called it a destination dish.
Wow.
And Lakshmi, reportedly a tough curry critic, yeah, you don't say, seemed like she's ready to add it to the JBarM's menu.
Wow.
Garcia, who is excited to be surrounded by many of her Houston peers, beams when named the winner. This girl's from Texas, she says proudly. I had to represent.
Yeah.
The loser, yeah, Chan, Fabes, and Shanti all are the bottom three, with Colicchio saying it's noticeable when the chefs are hesitant, unsure, uncomfortable, or overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
Though she had a strong start at the competition, it is Shanti's doing too much chunky soup that got her sent home. And she did. She got sent home.
This is Ashley from Appalachia.
Yeah, Afrolation.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, she got sent home. Obviously, like I said, I have to hold off on the Last Chance Kitchen.
Right.
But the standout dishes, Wallace's BLT, Buddha Lowe's barbecue beef bourguignon with the beef fat potato croquette, onion jam, and beautiful raw beet petals. It is one for the cookbooks, says this author. yeah. Judges say Jay Jung's Cajun style barbecue brisket with grits, cherry tomato, kimchi, and Asian pear relish is bursting with flavor.
I love Jay. I want her to go to the end.
And I thought Jay Jung, I honestly thought she was going to win in the very beginning here for episode 5. I thought... if anybody can nail this barbecue thing but make a good spin on it, it would be her.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a great job, but they were like, nah, we want Garcia, which she did an amazing job too, especially to do that against, I say against, basically for Padma. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got somebody who's going to be a huge critic of anything, you know, Southeast Asian or Indian. And yeah, Garcia nailed it. Favorite moments, when Garcia says, if you're not drinking a beer, are you really barbecuing? Mm. Yeah. Very
that
true.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then it says, seeing the chefs checking temperatures, spritzing their briskets with what is presumably a mop, and wrapping their meat in butcher paper to rest would make any barbecue enthusiast feel proud. Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, the wrapping paper to rest, definitely a brisket move. Either that or a turkey breast move. And I got to say, when people do that, there's a small part of me that it goes back to maybe like my enjoyment of like the whole hog barbecue experience that I'm kind of like,
I've never had that.
Yeah. It kind of goes when you see them do the butcher paper, there's a little part of me that's like, I know that's the right technique. I know that's what's going to make this taste absolutely amazing. It's too much.
Yeah.
I'm like, this isn't a kitchen. This is a smoker. This is outdoors. This is, but at the same time, I think it's because I don't smoke that much food
at all.
So it's one of those things where I bet them do it. Like if I tried it where they didn't do that and then I tried it when they did, I'd be like, oh, for the love of God, please wrap that every time. And yeah, but, and then the next one here, when Nick Wallace gives us his best cowboy impression while attempting to rope steer mannequins.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty good.
I remember that.
But yeah.
Yeah, so he didn't do so well.
No.
But I don't think I would either, so.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've tried lassoing anything. And I don't think I was that amazing at the time. Yeah.
It looks hard.
Yeah, it takes a lot of hand-eye and, like, trusting your, I don't know what you would call that. I don't know.
Coordination?
Kind of your coordination. It's, like, understanding your surroundings without actually looking at it.
Well, and you have a rope that long,
right?
It's thick, it gets heavy.
And imagine riding a horse at full speed while doing that. Yeah, I mean, it's...
No, I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm good.
But no, the next one here, Top Chef Houston, episode 6. They are channeling Texas girl power with homage to Selena and Barbara Jordan. It's the top 8. In Top Chef.
Yeah.
And the whole episode, they are honoring Texas female trailblazers. And it's an emotional challenge for most, especially for people like Garcia, right? She's from Houston, Texas, and she is a female chef, you know. But another great article, once again, Brittany Brito Garley of Houston Eater. I'm using your articles left and right here. Brittany, one day, if you would like to be on the pod, let me know. I like your writing, and I like the way you go over things.
When people write summaries of TV episodes.
Yeah.
I always, you know, when I'm done watching an episode of something, I like seeing people's take on it.
Yeah.
So seeing if I miss something, because that happens easily for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah. But no, Brittany, great writer here. Brittany Brito Garley. This one published April 7th. Like I said, going over episode 6, she mentions here, you know, they're going over all the female trailblazers in Texas. They have the queen of Tejano music, Selena. They had her sister as a judge.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, that is so cool. They had all sorts of people on there. They had Cheryl Swoops. I was telling Kaylee, I was like, when I was a kid, Cheryl Swoops was a big deal. She was a huge deal.
I've never heard of her, but it's because I don't watch the WNBA.
Yeah.
Or NBA, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Right. For another time on Culinary Convo.
Sports edition.
Yeah, sports edition. But yeah, the challenges this episode, we had the quick fire. The episode starts with an exciting twist. North Carolina chef Ashley Shanti returns after winning Top Chef Last Chance Kitchen.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, our
so it's like she really...
Right.
She never left, really.
Basically. Yeah, it's like she came in. She's like, I'm just going to beat the top person and come back.
Yep.
And so she did. Like I said, I always thought Ashley, from the way she talked about her food and the way she conducts herself in the kitchen, I have felt she's one of the top performers. So when she got eliminated, I was like, oh, no.
Like, they're like, not why? Kidding around.
Yeah.
Like, this is very like, tough.
Man, oh, man. Because, I mean, you look at what Jackson Kalb does, which he may be an amazing chef, but it kind of sounds like he's pulling everything out of his you-know-what to get stuff done, and well, he can't and taste.
Yeah, he can't taste.
Yeah, he can't smell, taste, like, whatever. Like, it is crazy. And so, anyway, this episode, it comes in, and the guest judges are Nini Nguyen and Kelsey Bernard of Top Chef Kentucky. Kelsey Bernard Clark, sorry. Of
yeah,
Tech
get her,
Chef,
get her
yeah,
right.
Top Chef Kentucky. And they go over, basically, they want a sweet and salty dessert. And it's, you know, Talenti is the, you know, sponsor. Talenti, shout out. If you want to be a sponsor of us, I require
yeah,
a lot
your...
of money and gelato. So just
love
send
your
it our way.
Gelato.
Yeah.
It's
or sorbetto.
Good.
Yeah. I like the sorbetto. Mm. That was pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Yeah. Decadent, but good.
Decadent, but good. Yeah. Mississippi's Nick Wallace realizes that his salty pick is less than stellar. I got
pork
effing
rinds. Rinds.
Everybody don't run away from me. S word.
Well, yeah. Yeah, when they, you know, because they picked everything first and
right.
then they announced the challenge. I said out loud, I was like, how is that going to work?
Yeah.
Like pork rinds? Really?
Man. Yeah. And I really did think like he might be not done for, so to speak, but like kind of like what he said, like don't everybody run away from
yeah.
me. Like, please. Like, I don't know who you're going to pair up with, but who does he pair up with? Last Chance Kitchen
Ashley.
Ninja.
Ashley.
The ginger, she had ginger snaps as her sweet. And so the two roll with it, crafting a ginger snap bundt cake with lemon ice, salted molasses buttermilk, and brown butter pork rind mulberry crumble.
Well, and if I'm
yeah.
thinking right, don't pork and ginger go really
oh, yeah.
well together
yeah.
in just a lot of other things?
Asian cooking as a whole?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, come on. Yeah. And so with all those things put in there, yeah, the judges immediately love it. The Texans, Evelyn Garcia, who won the last challenge, she is with Austin's homesick Joe Chan. And they plan for salted almond buñuelos with candied peaches and basil cream, which I thought sounded really good.
Yeah. And it looked really nice, too.
It did. It did. In the end, Shanti and Wallace win, with judges noting that their dessert was like cereal or a tres leches.
Mm.
Yeah. They did whoop, good.
Whoop.
Woo, yeah.
So she comes back from,
yeah.
you know, being eliminated. And then she's able to come back from Last Chance Kitchen. And then now she's won.
Right.
And they won immunity, too.
Right.
And so that's a huge deal.
Huge advantage.
Because it's like, yeah, I'm back and I'm not messing around.
Right. I'm back and I'm not going back.
Yeah.
This episode.
Yeah.
So y'all get it straight. Right.
Yeah.
Like, get it done. So... but it says the rest of them here, who they had at the table, they had, it says here, man, that was a run long or a long run on sentence, Brittany. Oh my gosh. Not really. It's a good run on sentence. but basically what it says here is that it is to serve it at Brennan's of Houston to modern day inspirations, including Lauren Anderson, the former principal dancer of Houston Ballet, Lori Choi, the co-founder of I'll Have What She's Eating, or I'll Have What She's Having. Sorry, I was thinking of another thing.
Good grief.
I know.
You are just...
I'm bumbling over my words here. A woman's health advocacy and education group. Christine Ha, the executive chef of Xinchou and the Blind Goat. And then Cecile Richards, the activist and daughter of Ann Richards. And then Suzette Quintanilla, the Selena sister and drummer. And Cheryl Swoops, the WNBA All-Star and three-time Olympic gold medalist. I mean, look at that group.
Yeah.
There's a picture there of the whole group.
Yeah.
Just.
Very accomplished.
Yeah. Like, talk about an honorable table to sit at.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. I think that's one of those things, like, if you tried to name drop some of those people later, I think most people would be kind of like, okay, we get it.
Right.
Like, you know, you were with these accomplished people. We get it. So, yeah, Wallace and Chan, they choose Ann Richards. They are the...
Because they... Don't they draw knives?
Yeah, they draw knives of the important people in Texas.
Yeah, so yeah. The five women that they're honoring, since there's 10 chefs, two of them are each assigned to one of the five women. And, you know, they're supposed to make dishes based on that woman's history and her legacy. So,
yeah. And they basically, as they go through it, they try to develop the flavors that they think will match each woman, which I'll be the first one to admit, when they were going over that, I was thinking in my head, like, Selena being the Tejano, you know, you go with like Tex-Mex, Mexican food flavors, that kind of thing. Cheryl Swoops, if you know enough about her, then you go with maybe where she grew up or where she went to college, mm-hmm. you know, like where did you, you know, win the Olympics, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the other ones that were, you know, politicians and stuff like that, you know, so then you're trying to think of like what towns in Texas.
Well, and I think, you know? Too, you have to incorporate like the presentation of it. You have to think
right.
about, I know there was somebody, and they'll probably talk about it in this, but they made it just look really nice and beautiful, and they were able to kind of connect. I think it was Evelyn.
Right.
But they were able to connect the woman through the food, both
right.
taste-wise and visually. So
yeah.
there's a lot to think about.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as straightforward.
Totally. And once again... I'm just going to start calling him the magician, Jackson Kalb. He honored Houston heavy hitter Barbara Jordan. I thought, honestly, this was the hardest person to try to do.
Yeah.
Just because she wasn't known for specific areas of food, so to speak. She's from Houston. So you just are like, okay. Well, she was the first African-American elected to the Texas House of Representatives by using – and then he was like, well, you got to have a lot of guts to do
heart
that.
Heart and guts.
Yeah, heart and guts. And he said those two words kept coming up. And so he used he cooked by using lots of chicken heart and guts in his creative dish of awful ragu and a tagliolini pasta that Swoops called incredible. That's right. Incredible.
He's flying.
He is.
He's flying through the show,
yes.
Even though he can't smell and taste.
Even though he can't smell
taste. He's incredible.
Taste, yeah. He's just winging it and doing great.
So
and
just know if you can't smell or taste,
you're
maybe
do
you
great.
Can make it on the
Yeah,
show
you're going to do great
too.
On Top Chef. Yeah. I think the biggest thing with him is I think this is one of those things where it's like if you're a very great technical chef and you don't know how to taste or smell, right, because of his situation – you kind of have to go off of your previous knowledge and like what you've cooked before and just hope that you're pulling this off to the best of your ability.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically don't lean on seasoning that much, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't taste how salty something is or how anything is, right? It's like, oh, I was going to let my basil shine. For him, it's like, nope, I'm just going to let my chicken heart and guts.
I'm honestly going to cry laughing.
Oh my God,
if he wins.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like nobody knew that he could smell or taste, and he was like, guess what, suckers?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's going to be ridiculous if
I think that's the reason I like him too, is because no one knows, and he hasn't told anybody. And so it makes me wonder, like, is there going to be a dramatic moment where somebody finds out?
Right.
You know, and then it's like a big deal
They're going to make like a whole episode
about
it.
It's just funny.
All of them hearing, like, you know, playing telephone.
Yeah.
Right. And going through trying to figure out, like, wait a minute, you mean Jackson?
Yeah.
Jackson?
I heard a nasty rumor about you, Jackson. You can't smell or taste, and you're a chef.
And you cook food on the show?
You're on Top Chef season 19?
Yeah. And see, that's the other thing is, like, are they going to be like, no, he has COVID right now? And it's like,
he's
recovered, but not that part. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. They say, biggest oops of the show, Phoebus cutting oysters seems to be the judge's least favorite decision of the night.
Yeah, that wasn't...
That was a bad move.
Because I feel like, and what do I know, you know, but I feel like even if oysters were big, like she was saying they were, and so she wanted to cut them so that they were more edible, I guess, I'd rather just have the whole thing.
Right.
And then, you know, you can bite into it or you can like cut it with a knife and make as many pieces as you want. But then I learned from you when we were reheating chicken once for cashew chicken, I cut it and you're like, why'd you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I thought it would be easier. And you're like, no, it gets dry when you're reheating it. And so,
And so, really the next part here, the best turnaround, it does say here, with a little help from Garcia, DeMar Brown adds more flour to his sticky tortillas and turns them into works of art to complement his pozole.
Yeah, I was worried about that
because,
if you're in a time crunch, you don't want to mess up tortillas.
No.
So I'm glad that it worked out for him.
Right. Yeah. The winner, judges cast their ballots for the winning dish with Kalb, Garcia, and Lowe all highlighted for their creativity.
Guess what, folks? If you don't know them by last name, Jackson's in the top for like the 80th episode in a row. Okay. Did you know this would happen? I bet you didn't.
I mean, if there's like betting on this, like in Vegas, if you're betting on Kalb,
they're
you're
like,
making
we're going
major
for the
bank.
Underdog.
Yeah.
Can't taste herself.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Anyway.
And Buddha.
Yeah, Buddha.
Buddha's
yeah.
been doing really well.
Yeah. In the end, though, Houston's own Garcia wins, making this
Woo-hoo!
Her second elimination round win
in
a
row.
Yeah. Yeah. Garcia's moved to tears and Houston cheers.
Well, and, she served a dish to Selena's sister, and she was saying Selena was her idol growing up. And so it's like, I can only imagine, how incredible that moment was.
Yeah. I mean, that's gotta be like a huge deal, Oh man. The loser though, Shanti disappointed us, but she has immunity. Right.
Yeah.
She's in
Ashley.
The bottom three. Yeah. But Culpin, she had been an inconsistent seasoner. Yeah. So she was criticized for her lack of salt, but judges ultimately eliminate Phoebus I don't know how to pronounce that name.
Monique, right?
Yeah, it was Monique, I'm pretty sure, with Judge Tom Colicchio noting that her hesitation in this stage of the competition is not ideal. Monique.
That's harsh.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
But yeah, standout dishes, low, Buddha, he did a chicken breast and cooks up a poulet en baisse, or poulet en baisse, with a Paris mash formed into a figure eight to pay homage to Coleman's tricks. along with a brown mustard sauce and a chicken mousse, plus a piece of popcorn, because if Bessie is flying, he says, you're going to want to watch the show.
Wow.
Good one.
Buddha. I miss that.
Thank you, Buddha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether or not organ meats are your thing, Kolb's awful ragu sounds heavenly. Oh, does it? Yeah. The favorite moments when Ashley Shanti busts out in Top Chef themed freestyle in her mirror. Okay. Yeah, she did okay with that, you know, the freestyle, her rap.
Oh, yeah. The mirror.
Yeah, in the mirror. Yeah. The heartwarming display of teamwork. Jackson, once again.
Jackson.
Helps Garcia drizzle chili oil, which he can't even taste, on her dish when she begins to worry that she doesn't have time. Garcia helps Brown assess his tortillas. Chan wipes Nick's plate to make sure it looks perfect. So they're all, it's like a chain event there.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Cecile Richards shares that her mother Ann Richards and Barbara Jordan sat on the floor to watch Cheryl Swoops play basketball, showing how these trailblazers inspired each other.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do you think of Top Chef Houston season 19?
I really like it so far. What I've noticed in a couple of past seasons is that sometimes there are people who are a little too competitive and like jerks.
Yeah.
In that Kentucky season,
woo.
I don't remember exactly what happened or how it went down, but there was some bullying going on.
Yeah.
And I did not like that.
Yeah.
And the person who won that season, who was on this last episode, was part of that bullying. So
shots fired.
It's the truth. I have my own feelings about that. Anyway, I say that because I appreciate that this season, at least so far, isn't like that.
Yeah.
Like we talked about, or like that article mentioned, you know, they're there like helping each other.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate, I know it sounds like, I don't know, fuddy duddy or whatever,
it
like, oh, they're all so happy and whatever. But I like it when people can recognize, even though it's a competition, it's a show, it's like you can still take 15 seconds to help somebody out.
I think
sabotage them or anything.
I think it's because it reminds you of Great British Baking Show.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I like I said, to me, in a perfect world with Top Chef, I don't mind the camaraderie, but let's be honest, I think that one, they need to take the baseball approach and not have a clock.
Mm.
Yeah, the quick fire, if you want to incorporate a time clock on that, that's fine. But like, let's be honest here, chefs in the real world, they have a time clock of service, but they don't have a time clock in preparation, right?
Like, I guess, but you have to think about the fact there's people filming the show.
Sure,
there's, you know, the host, there's the guests they have and all of that.
Totally.
And it's like, you have to think about
that.
Totally.
But the name of the show is Top Chef, not Fastest Chef. Or speed round chef extraordinaire. My name's Jackson Kolb, and I can't taste or smell, but I'm quick and I'm
good.
Well,
I'm sure that, you know, the ladies on Drag Race, they have time limits, but they just don't talk about it.
Right.
You know, it's not like part of...
Let me put it this way. It should be very loose time frames and not like you have 30 minutes, right? Like, you should be done by, you know, 6 p.m. the next day, right? Something like that. Like, we'll give you that time.
I don't know. That's just, like, rewording it to me.
No. I mean, it's like a deadline time. Instead of saying you have, like, because you know that, like, in their prep, they only give them, like, a couple hours and then the clock stops. And then they start the clock again, but somebody gets an advantage of, like, 30 minutes, right? I'm telling you.
Anyway, you asked me what I thought.
I know. I was telling you what I think, which is that they need to take the baseball approach on the elimination rounds. And they need to say, like, you know, we have a dinner tomorrow night with these famous women of Texas. And so you have from now until whatever time to get your dish.
Don't they
kind
of do that on the, what's that called? The restaurant wars? Or is that what they call it?
On Top Chef?
Yeah.
Well, no, because they have to – well, they kind of do. The main thing is it's a restaurant concept of one chef, right? And then the others have to kind of go with what that chef wants to do.
I'm talking about the time thing. They're similar. Like, dinner service starts at 7 right. tomorrow.
But they don't tell them when – like, there's the first restaurant that will come in right – basically, the judges go in immediately. But then the second restaurant – the judges are coming in later.
Anyway, I'm going to circle it back to me because this is my podcast. No, it's not. Sorry. That was a dumb joke.
Mean.
yeah, I really like the season so far. I like, everything that all of the chefs have brought. Still kind of sad and disappointed about Sam. My short king chef.
Same guy.
Really, really sad that he's delusional. Yeah. I kind of wish we could see him go further, but that's the way it works.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really hoping that, you know, Evelyn or Jay or Buddha, they're kind of like in my top three right now.
Right.
I bet Jackson will be up there too, but... yeah, I like the season and can't wait to see what else is going to happen.
Yeah. I was going to say that the main thing that Sam King, that he had an issue with was the potatoes being grilled. which, by the way...
which feeds into his delusion.
Totally. Fed
into
it.
He's like,
I'm
going to grill potatoes. Right. And it's like, you can't do that.
He tried to do like the teenager... I call it teenage inspiration, which is, listen, you can't improve if you don't make mistakes. And I made a mistake. And it's like, we get it, Sam.
But that's not the structure of the show.
Right. Yeah, you're supposed
to
like...
it's not avant-garde free-for-all.
Right. This isn't,
you got to follow some rules.
This isn't third grade art class where they give you, you know, the finger paintings and you just do a good finger painting. Right. Like, it's...
right.
You gotta have technique. You gotta know what you can or can't do in a certain, you know, time frame that they have. But yeah, we will take a quick little break and then we will move on to Only in Florida, basically going over the one of a kinds in Florida. Stay tuned. Want to thank everybody for listening to the pod. I also want to give a shout out to our new segment coming up this month, Willamette Valley Spotlight. Going to be talking to some of the local businesses, restaurants, producers, you know, product makers, what have you. And so stay tuned. And I also want to, you know, give a huge shout out to all the people joining up, being convenants, what have you, on Facebook. A lot of threads going through there. And also on any of our other social media platforms. Thanks for chiming in, throwing in some comments, some likes, some hearts, whatever they may be. I know I appreciate it greatly. And always check us out, you know, on all the socials. We have a Pinterest, we have a TikTok, we've got our Twitter, our Facebook, Instagram. We have a Reddit page that, as I mentioned before, I'm still working out. But yeah, so just check us out all on the social media. And if you do want to support the podcast, remember to go to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support. And once again, giving a shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. And now we move on to, I want to talk about our merch. We have merch, and it's through threadless.com. It is culinaryconvo.threadless.com. You can get pens, stickers, t-shirts, masks with filters. You can get, you know, all sorts of stuff. You can get a shower curtain. a rainbow culinary convo shower curtain. It's pretty amazing. But anyway, check us out there. We will move on to our one-of-a-kinds in Florida. All right, everybody, welcome to One of a Kinds, except we are in Florida.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're in Florida for One of a Kinds. And so I know I've got my little history with Florida. Kaylee, what do you know with Florida here?
What do I know about Florida?
Or what have you experienced with Florida, the great state of Florida?
Well, I know... It's in the news a lot for a lot of reasons.
Oh, good, good,
you know,
I'm
Florida
hoping.
Florida man. Oh. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that.
It's kind of like a running joke.
Oh.
But personally, I don't have anything with Florida. I've never been.
Oh.
Actually, the furthest I've been in the country is Missouri.
Right.
Yeah. To visit your family one year.
Yeah.
And that is the furthest I've been. That's not... You know, I don't want that to be the furthest I'll go, but yeah. I've never been to Florida. I would like to go, you know, just to experience it. I know people love the beaches there, and Miami's supposed to be really cool, really diverse, really fun. I know a lot of people go to spring break there, and you know, Disney World is there, and
yeah.
I think like. You know, one of the other theme parks is there too, but
right.
Yeah, that's what I have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, my main thing with Florida, first time I ever went, I was 6 years old and I went to, Disney World, hung out in the Mickey pool for days on end.
Sounds like a six-year-old's dream.
Right. There was a restaurant that was right, like, down the way from, like, where our hotel was, and we got to walk by the Mickey pool to go there. Mm. And so I'd kind of act like the Mickey pool was mine, really.
Yeah, that was, like, your
That was my hangout. I was kind of like, yeah, hey, guys, that's great. You're using the pool. Just remember, you know, no pushing.
You're the king of the pool.
Right,
the Mickey
pool. The Mickey pool. And we would walk by, and I remember getting dino nugget, like chicken or fish with french fries, like at every meal. and I thought it was like so fancy. I was like, oh yeah, no, only at Disney World, guys.
At Disney World. It's a separate topic kind of, but I really want to go to Disneyland and Disney World just to experience the food.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of don't care about the rides, to be honest, at this point in my life. I want to go for the food.
Right.
You know, I've always wanted one of those Mickey-shaped ice cream bars.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's probably just vanilla ice cream chocolate dipped, but I think it's just, like, the shape and the size. Right. It's like, this is a whole experience that I haven't had yet.
Yeah. No, it's it's like a whole thing when you go, and it was the first time I rode a plane, right? So I was kind of like, oh man, like
this is crazy.
Yeah, like, this is crazy.
I'm flying.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny because like my ears kept popping. And so it was like, I just remember hating being on the plane because my ears would pop on ascension and descension every time, but no, it was like a really fun time to go. And then the other thing with Florida for a while was like baseball stuff. There were a lot of players coming out of Florida, and Little League World Series, like a lot of players coming from Cuba, but they would go to Florida first.
And there's a lot of like spring training in Florida, right?
Right. So. Oh, yeah. Spring training every year near, what is it, Jupiter, Jupiter, Florida. And yeah. And then more recently, I got family out there in Florida. Shout out to my grandma Georgie and my uncle Dean and Aunt Jana. They're all out there and I hope they're listening to the pod.
Yeah, and I hope we can visit one day.
Yeah, we got to visit out there. And so, yeah, I got family out there. I got, you know, great Disney memories.
Yeah, that's obvious. Yeah,
I remember Epcot. Epcot was like a crazy thing. They had a virtual reality thing.
Golf ball building, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The big golf ball looking thing. Yeah, and they had a tram that like went around, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool, man. Yeah. Pretty cool, man. But anyway, yeah. And then I know Florida from Florida Man. there was the movie. What was it?
Florida Project?
Yeah, the Florida Project. That was not a happy time.
That's not a happy movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah, pretty dark. But, you know, Florida's dark, as in it gets really dark in Florida because of gators and all sorts of stuff. Yes, yeah, snakes. And
you have to, be careful when you're on the toilet.
Yeah, yeah, you got to be careful when you're on the toilet. Yeah, that's the...
Because snakes.
Yeah, that's what I hear of Florida. Watch where you walk your dog because of gators, and watch where you go to the bathroom because of snakes. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But not making fun of Florida.
Oh, and hurricanes.
Right, hurricanes. Yeah,
sadly,
yeah, big.
There's a lot of hurricanes.
Yeah, a lot of hurricanes.
Okay, let's talk about good things.
Right. Let's talk about the great things of Florida, the one of a kind things. I went to one website here, visitaugustine.com, going over 13 Florida foods in St. Augustine. And first one here, I've never had these. This was the first time I had heard of them. Not the food, so to speak, but this type of food made this way. And it is conch fritters. Mm. Conchs are a form of sea snail, and conch fritters are when these sea snails are mixed up into a delicious batter, deep fried and served as an appetizer.
Yeah, most things deep fried are really good.
Right. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I used to think it was always conch.
Right.
Like a conch shell.
Right.
Not conch.
Right.
Conch.
Conch.
That's like a noise effect.
Yeah.
Name. Conch.
Conch. Yeah. And then basically they say that conch fritters are like the escargot of Florida, except far more appetizing.
Looks meatier.
It does. So. I mean, it's a fritter, though, so it's got cornmeal. You know, it's like a ball. But it's deep fried in a big vat of oil and dipped in rich, creamy tartar. Mm-hmm. And then number four here, gator tail.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Get them little toothy boys out of the pond.
Like popcorn shrimp or chicken. It kind of does.
Yeah, especially with the breading.
Yeah,
you know.
If you didn't know.
Right.
It was alligator.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, it's chicken. It's
and
shrimp.
Is that, do you think that's salsa? I bet this
tells
us.
I don't know.
Us.
That's really chunky.
It's really chunky. Yeah. So it says you can often get a feel for local cuisine by trying some of the local game or ordering a catch of the day, whether it's from the ocean or a swamp. Yes. Gator is an actual dish in some Florida restaurants, and the game is in abundance here with over 1 million gators in the state. The tail is deep fried and served as an appetizer or an entree. Yeah, because a gator po' boy. That's what I imagine. I don't know why. Mm. Wondering what gator tail tastes like? It's different for everyone, but for me, it's like half chicken, half fish. That's kind of like frog legs.
Yeah.
You know,
same thing.
I just want
to say, that's not your opinion, right?
That's who wrote this. Okay. Yeah, for St. Augustine. And yeah, they say, which makes sense if you lean towards the theory that early reptilian dinosaurs were covered in feathers.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great.
We're throwing it back.
Great point to throw out there. Yeah. But visitors can dine on this reptilian delicacy at Florida Cracker Cafe on St. George Street in St. Augustine. You can't miss it because the logo is an alligator saying, "Let's eat my tail." Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. He's only saying, "Let's eat." So St. Augustine, automatically fake news. cannot believe.
Isn't alligator chewy?
Yeah, a little. It can be. Well, it's kind of like octopus or some of the other, you know.
Oh, if it's cooked wrong.
Right.
Then it's gross.
Yeah. If you overcook it, it's going to be a little chewy.
I'll try it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I'll try it.
They try us all the time.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Watch out.
Even if you're vegan, I think if it's gator time, I was just trying to have a quick, jot through the creek and gator ate my leg. And, you know, I know. We're kind of going in their environment, so I get it. But at the same time, like, you know, watch out, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you keep swimming.
Who's
along
Jeffrey?
Your way. Jeffrey the gator.
Oh.
Yeah. He was a friend of mine at the Mickey pool.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Really
it's
wish
he'd
keep
like
up.
It's been like over 20 years.
Right. Wow. It's been over 20 years. I don't know if he's still around. If he is, give us a shout out at culinaryconvopod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Alligator and then,
that knows how to use a computer, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Over by the Mickey pool.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But the next one here, the best part of the entire state. I'm sorry, Grandma Georgie, Jean, or Dean and Jana. I'm really sorry. Key lime pie.
Key lime pie is so good.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Key lime pie.
It's incredible.
Key lime.
It's one of the most refreshing desserts I've had.
It sings every time you eat it. Like, it just, you bite into it, and everybody's kind of like, it's just a lime, or it's just, like, cheesecake, or whatever.
But see, right? That's the thing, though, is with key lime, it's not super acidic
right.
or tart
right.
like other citrus can be.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're drinking, like, a margarita, that has lime in it, and sometimes it can be too yeah. tart, too
right.
sour. I've never had a key lime pie or flavored thing that's mm-hmm. too sour
right
or you know too much it's yeah. always been perfect, like the perfect blend of sweetness and mm-hmm. a little bit of citrusy sour.
Yeah,
I have nothing bad to say about key lime pie.
Yeah, when people talk about pies and like their favorite pies, right, apple has been my favorite for decades. But I think a close second is key lime.
It's really good.
It is so good. It, man, oh, man.
It's a perfect summer
it is.
Dessert.
Oh, man.
So like I said, a lot of desserts are, like, really decadent.
Right.
You know, or rich, yeah. but this is not.
It just, yeah. Especially with fried food. You know, if you ate fried gator and then your dessert is key lime pie.
That's just your average yeah. Thursday night in Florida.
Thursday night in Florida. It is right there. And then for an appetizer, you can have Menorcan chowder. Menorcans first settled in St. Augustine, Florida, back in 1777, along with our cat Biscuit, because
yeah,
he just
jumped up
on the desk. Oh, my gosh,
he
man.
He heard about key lime
right,
pie, and he's
right.
like, I want that.
I want key lime pie.
I want gator.
Yeah, yeah. Please don't rub the microphone, sir. But anyway, Menorcan chowder. Back in 1777, they brought with them a rich culinary tradition that is still shared today. Menorcan chowder is a local specialty in St. Augustine, and recipes have been carried down for generations for an authentic chowder made with conch. Head to Sunset Grill. For more chowder love, visitors can go to the Great Chowder Debate, an annual competition pitting chowder against chowder in a fight to the death.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, St. Augustine. Number 10 here, the Cuban sandwich or the Cubano.
Yum.
You know my love for this sandwich.
Yeah, you love
Cubanos. I love Cubanos.
Like anywhere that has a Cubano, yeah. if Devin sees it on the menu, that's likely what he's going to order.
It's just one of those sandwiches, two different types of pork on one sandwich. It was mind-blowing when I saw it. And then they were like, pickles and mustard. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't even like pickles and mustard. And then they're like, Swiss cheese. And I'm like, this is getting out of hand. And then they're like, we're going to panini press it. And something about it, I was like, I've got to try it. And the second I did, yeah, it changed my life. I was like, oh, my gosh, I like all of these things put together.
I really like the acidity of the pickle and mustard.
Yeah.
And then you put it with the saltiness.
Of, like, the Swiss and the pork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super good.
Oh, man. And you got to press it. People who make a Cubano and it's not pressed, you're missing out on, like, this textural wonderland. Because, like, the slices of ham are like slightly chewy and the pickles are kind of gummy. Then there's the melty cheese, but then the shredded texture of the pulled pork. And then the mustard's just silky.
And I just think, too, when you put it in the panini press, it smushes it all together.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything can kind of blend easier, like mix together better.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that I think you could add to this sandwich, personally, that I think would, like, set it off is under the ham, super crispy onion straws.
Ooh.
Something about that sings to
I was
me.
Thinking
I don't know why.
Like grilled onion.
Right. Yeah, you know, that would work
not
too.
Not raw, but right. like grilled or almost, sauteed. That would be
like,
so good.
Yeah, like mustard onions, like caramelized mustard onions or something.
Yeah, because that's kind of bitter.
Right, right. Biscuit's attacking my whole area over here right now, so he needs to calm down. I'm sorry. The production standards at this place has gone down.
Sadly, this isn't our job.
It's his job to terrorize me. He is just, oh my gosh. I'm pushing him back with some foam. We'll see what happens. But the next thing here, a point of note from St. Augustine, orange juice. Orange juice, I mean, obviously when I was growing up, right? Like Florida oranges, like that was a big thing. The orange is Florida's cash crop, and orange juice is the official drink of Florida.
I will take mine with no pulp.
You know, when I was younger, definitely no pulp. I didn't want any pulp anywhere near my drink. Nowadays, I will do light pulp, especially if it's like freshly squeezed. Like,
but if you're getting it bottled, I don't want any.
Yeah, I like light pulp if it's bottled, and I mean super light, like you know, where it's practically not there. You know.
Yeah. So none.
Almost. Like, I'll add some of my own. I'll grab an orange and just grab a fork and just scrape it on top of the cup. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Then the next website here for Florida, if you want to scrape your own oranges and call it the Devon Special, then that's fine. You can go to tripstodiscover.com. Iconic foods you must try in Florida. Part of Disney World, definitely Dole Whip. Yeah.
Everyone and their second
grandparent
freaks out over Dole Whip.
Yeah, and then you try to make it at home. It's not as good, but it still tastes okay.
Yeah.
It says here, if you visit Walt Disney World when in Florida, a Dole Pineapple Whip should be a part of your itinerary.
Mm-hmm.
With a cult-like following, this beloved frozen pineapple treat has copycat recipes all over the internet. However, to taste the most authentic version of this delightful dessert, you will have to visit a Disney park.
See, that's why I want to go to all the Disney parks.
Yeah.
Not because I want to ride the rides or whatever. I want to eat
the normal
food.
Stuff. Yeah, you just want the food.
I want a Dole Whip float.
Right,
that
the float.
That sounds heavenly.
Mm-hmm. And you know me, I love pineapple.
Yeah.
And so like a Dole Whip, oh man.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Super good. Yeah, and the picture here, it's got a little upside down pineapple cake with it. Oh, that would be good. That'd
very
be good.
Cute.
The next one here, stone crabs. Very iconic pinchers, stone crabs. Stone crabs are a Florida delicacy. Due to this, there are strict harvesting regulations to preserve the population of these creatures, and only the claws are allowed to be consumed. Wildlife advocates insist only one claw is removed per crab before they are set free again, allowing them to regenerate and be harvested for the future. This special dish of sweet, delicious meat is served cold in tangy mustard sauce for dipping, perfect to indulge in a hot summer day. Especially in Florida, because that's what most days are in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hot, humid.
Yeah. Or hurricane-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet those would be good as crab cakes.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I
just shred it up.
Crab cakes.
Yeah, just shred it up.
Yeah. It'd probably take a lot of legs to do that if they can only do one per crab. But
They'd be like, well, Kaylee asked for crab cakes, so guys, let's go. Let's bring our mallets, and we're gonna destroy some stone crab population
For this woman.
Right, just for
crab cakes.
Yeah, just for her crab cakes.
It's all about me.
And then there is what they basically, I mean, Florida period is known for fish. but very known for grouper and snapper. They are two of the state's favorite bottom fish and are served so fresh that you are sure to feel like you've stepped on a faraway tropical island. Snapper is a favorite with locals for its sweet and succulent characteristics, and grouper is often paired with citrus, blackened, or served in a sandwich. Yeah, grouper sandwiches are a big deal. I know that. Both fishes are great choices if you're looking for a light and healthy meal to satisfy your taste buds. And they talk about here another notable thing, Floridian cuisine. So Florida Caribbean, you know, cuisine. Yeah. And what is affectionately coined as Floridian cuisine, the southern part of Florida is a vibrant fusion of cultural diversity with a mix of Puerto Rican, Cuban, Jamaican, Haitian, Colombian, Panamanian, and the Bahamian dishes. If your visit to Florida takes you down south, you will be disappointed if you don't indulge in at least a few dishes influenced by one of these Latin and Caribbean cultures. Florida is unique in that you can taste authentic arroz con pollo, lechon asado, and fried plantains, arepas, empanadas, and Jamaican jerk chicken without needing to hop on a plane.
See, that's a big reason why I want to go to Florida, is to try all those different foods.
Right.
Because, you know, that's not really a thing.
Right.
On the West Coast.
On the West Coast, yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. What I was thinking of is not only is this Floridian, and when they say authentic, probably closer to authentic.
Yeah.
Right? Because those same things, New York City.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's like...
Well, New York City has everything.
Right. Right.
But in the South.
Yeah. But in the South, in Florida, this right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next one here, I thought this was a good noteworthy one because I've heard of this... like a lot when I was growing up, and it's kind of throughout the South ish, but it's definitely Florida. The Publix sub, while not the most exotic item on the list, any Floridian will tell you that the best subs come from the best grocery store on the planet, Publix.
So I'm just going to guess this is like a Buc-ee's.
Yeah.
From Texas, or like Wawa in the Northeast.
Kind of, yeah.
Like, and like this store has its own culture, basically.
Right. Yeah, it is a grocery store.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, but it's a chain. And yeah, it's their motto is like, shopping is a pleasure. Publix has a cult-like following in Florida and is what Floridians believe is what grocery stores should aspire to be. Don't believe it? Visit any of the stores during lunchtime and you will find locals dutifully waiting in line for one of their freshly made boar's head subs. If you're overwhelmed with choice, go with the popular chicken tender sub, made with perfectly crisp, chopped tenders with your own made-to-order toppings. We're sure it will convert you into a Publix sub believer.
I would definitely get that.
Yeah.
But I just have to say, maybe I'm just being rude. I don't know.
Oh, it's probably,
If, shut up. If this store is what they want their grocery stores to be, like that's the standard they want it at.
That's the level.
What are the other grocery stores? Like?
Walmarts. That's what they are. Walmart supercenters. I could ask. I could ask my aunt and my uncle and see kind of what they say because, you know, it's one of those things like you can't have that everywhere, right?
No.
So, like. You know, it just depends, but the Publix, because what's interesting about the Publix sub is there's something similar in Canada. Chef Maddie Matheson, it's more like a 7-Eleven gas station type of vibe, but they have a chicken tender sub.
That looked so good.
Yeah, that he adds like buffalo sauce and all this stuff to it. So, yeah, good stuff. And then from our favorite, one of my favorite anyway, websites, onlyinyourstate.com, iconic foods of Florida. Foods. Yeah, foods of Florida. The strawberries in Florida, strawberry shortcake.
Ooh.
Did you know that Florida is the winter strawberry capital of the world?
Really?
Yeah. The Florida Strawberry Festival in Plant City has been celebrating our second favorite fruit for decades. If you want to check out one incredible strawberry celebration, head to Plant City March 3rd through the 13th. So the next one here is kumquats. And I actually do really like kumquats. I didn't try a kumquat until I was out here in Oregon.
I've never had one.
Yeah, they're very good. They're very citrusy, very you can eat the whole thing. That is true.
The only thing I know about it is, you know, when I was a stupid preteen, that's what I used to call people, like, as an insult.
Like an insult.
Yeah, because, you know, I was...
You nincompoop, oh, you kumquat.
Yeah, because, you know, it was a...
You farquat. Yeah.
So it was like, I don't know what this is, and it sounds kind of funny.
Right.
Yeah, I don't call people that anymore.
Yeah, sure you don't.
But that... Excuse you?
I hear you say kumquat don't. Every now and again.
Nuh-uh.
That, sometimes about one of our furry sons.
No.
I think I heard you say that.
Just have it on record, blasphemy.
Okay.
By Devin.
Whatever.
Okay.
All right.
This is wrong.
Okay. But anyway.
I'd like to try one.
Oh, yeah. They're very good.
Yeah.
Dade City celebrates an annual festival for the nearby town of St. Joseph, which claims the title of Kumquat Capital of the World. Or as Kaylee would like to put it, the capital of a bunch of dummies.
Stop! That'd be like 11-year-old Kaylee, not current day, okay?
Yeah,
stop.
She, 11-year-old Kaylee would be giggling like crazy right now.
Stop slandering
me. Being like, somebody call it kumquat! And just running in circles.
Stupid.
Yeah. Oh, man. But wow. No, the festival, it's held in late January. So you can visit in January, get your kumquat fix, and then go in March and get your strawberries.
Just take like a 2-month trip.
Right.
To Florida.
To Florida.
Yeah.
But you can still find kumquat marmalade and desserts at some farmers markets. And then there are Cedar Key clams. This is the first I've ever heard of them, believe it or not.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, now our second son, Benny. He's jumping up on a desk here.
Hi, Benny.
Jeez. Cedar Key clams. It's another one of Florida's coolest small towns, but this one is famous for its clams. It's located about an hour southwest of Gainesville. You can try just about any clam dish here, but try Tony's Seafood for some world championship clam chowder.
Nice.
Ted Peters is going towards the next one, but world championship clam chowder, that's some big words, you know? Like, we're out here in Oregon. We got Moe's. We got all sorts of clam chowders.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if any of them are claiming world championship status.
Probably not, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't know. And I only see just pictures of clams. I don't see the actual chowder anywhere.
Right.
So, show your face.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are fighting words.
Yeah, Tony's. Show your chowder off.
Okay. Sheesh.
Yeah, I'm just calling it out. Like, I see it.
Feisty.
I'm feisty. but yeah, the next one here, smoked fish like dip. I've heard of this. Never had the pleasure of trying it. I really want to. Ted Peters' famous smoked fish in St. Petersburg has been luring tourists and locals alike with mouth-watering smoked fish and fish spread for more than 50 years. And it's got a bottle of crystals there, some crackers. Oh, yeah.
From here, that looked like dessert.
Right.
And I was like, why is there dessert with fish?
Right.
So I'm glad I didn't say anything until after.
Until you waited.
Yeah, I waited.
Yeah. You would have looked like a real kumquat if you had been. The next one here, travelingmad.com. They had a blog of food in Florida, famous Florida foods. This one is the Miccosukee Fry Bread. Adventure lovers and slow travelers looking for an authentic glimpse of Florida before development and tourism should head south toward the River of Grass, the beautiful Florida Everglades. This vast wilderness and fragile ecosystem is nature's filtering system for the rivers and lakes flowing from central Florida down to the Florida Bay. The Native American tribes who called this land home lived here long before anyone else arrived, and some descendants of the Seminole and the Miccosukee tribes still live here today. If you like finding local food, you can't get more traditional and local than a plate of fry bread, which I've got a feeling is not that like traditional, but we'll go with it. Made to order at the Miccosukee Village in the heart of the Everglades, located near the Shark Valley Visitors Center and entrance to Everglades National Park, the Miccosukee Village restaurant serves up plates of fried pumpkin bread made to order. Mm. See, that makes sense then. Fried pumpkin bread.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense. Stay for the sideshows if you want, though we can't speak to the authenticity of those. But the fry bread is quite tasty, and we hear the gator bites are pretty yummy, yep, too.
There we go.
And get more gator. But yeah, it kind of looks like, what do they call that? A Navajo or an Indian taco. Uh-huh, right,
yeah.
The bread, yeah, right, but Indian fry bread, which I know that is not as traditional, right? It's very fair food type, you know, thing out in the Midwest or the Southwest, right? But it's still made quite a bit, fry bread, made all the time. And they have a picture here of one of the Miccosukee people tribe trying to almost get their head bit off by a gator.
Hmm.
Brave dude. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but and then some fry bread with some butter. Mm-mm-mm. Then you got Key West pink shrimp. If you're looking to try some of the tastiest food in Florida, these succulent morsels are not to be missed. You'll hear them referred to as pinks or Key West pinks because of their rosy blush color. They're in season from November through June. So January, kumquats, March, strawberries,
yeah.
And then, yeah, all the way through June, getting your Key West pink shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
It's pink season, rolls around all the time, November through June. Key West pink shrimp are sweet and tender, the perfect shrimp cocktail or peel and eat shrimp appetizer. And of course, they sweeten up any dish of Floridian cuisine. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And then the next one here. A citrus swirl.
Ooh.
Yeah. Give your tongue a sleigh ride. That's
very inappropriate.
Wow. What goes better together than fresh Florida orange juice and farm fresh cream, especially when it's the frozen kind swirled in a wafer cone? It's Florida's answer to the creamsicle.
Ooh.
A good old-fashioned citrus swirl from a Florida orange grove stand is still one of the tastiest treats around. And it looks amazing.
It looks so good. I love creamsicles, yeah. So I would love to try this.
Yeah. I mean, it says Yellow Banks Grove, and it's just a little cup with a little spoon.
Add it to the list of places to go.
Yeah. Add that. Add it. And then other notables here, we went to foodnetwork.com. They've got a huge thing of the U.S., obviously. Best food in America and what to eat in Florida. But the other notables, you have scallops in Florida, ceviche, and then Cigar City in Tampa, Florida is a big deal, I'm guessing for cigars, but also for craft beer.
Mm.
Big deal. Down there. And then also there is Florida seafood stew. And so that is just a huge stew of Florida seafood. You got scallops, you got your pinks, your gator, your Uncle Ned's possum. You got everything
yeah.
in there. Florida seafood stew. Yeah. And then the next one here, this is one that I've been wanting to try for years. And I know I can make it at home with those little potato stick thing. What do they call those?
From Canada.
Yeah, from Canada. I can make it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is a fritas. The frita is essentially a Cuban take on a hamburger and has been a Miami staple since the 1950s, arriving on the shores of South Florida with the mass of immigrants fleeing the Cuban Revolution. The classic variation features a beef patty seasoned with cumin, paprika, and pepper, topped with fried potato sticks or papas fritas, and sandwiched between slices of flaky Cuban bread.
Mm.
Since 1976, El Rey de las Fritas has served some of the best in town. While the shop's now 4 plus a roaming food truck, El Rey de las Fritas,
yeah.
Yeah. you come into Oregon?
Yeah.
Huh?
Make
the drive. They serve some of the best in town. But anyway, offer numerous variations. One comes with fried plantains on top. That would be really good. Traditionalists stick to the original frita cubana. This one blends ground beef and chorizo. Oh, my God. squash into a patty with a secret formula of spices topped with raw onion and julienne fries. Oh, man, that looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my dad's favorite drinks, a mojito. For many, the mojito is synonymous with Miami Beach. Nearly every outdoor cafe along Lincoln Road or Ocean Drive offers the Havana-born beverage by the glass or pitcher. For a banner version of the fizzy rum cocktail, head for the Delano South Beach, the upscale Art Deco hotel. That's up your alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, designed by Felipe Stark, serves fantastic drinks right next to the elegant palm and cabana line pool. Like the stylish minimal design of the grounds, the poolside mojitos are simply sublime. A mix of fresh lime, white rum, mint, and simple syrup topped with some club soda.
Mm.
Oh yeah.
Yum.
And then cafecito. Are you ready? Cafecito. Portland and Brooklyn may be the poster cities of the third wave coffee scene, but Miamians have long paid allegiance to caffeine thanks to Cafe Cubano. The stimulating beverage should be within 5 minutes of any point in the Magic City. One of the best places to enjoy Cuban coffee is Enriqueta's Sandwich Shop. In Midtown. From a small service window, the staff here pulls the perfect cafecito, powerful doses of super sweet coffee served in espresso cups. Those who can't handle the rocket fuel power of the straight-up sugary brew can order a cortadito, essentially the Latin version of an Italian macchiato or a café con leche with hot steamed milk.
It sounds up my alley.
I know. That sounds really good.
I don't like dark coffee. I have to have a lot of sugar.
Right. And,
like creamer. Right.
You have to froof it up.
Half and half. So.
You have to make it all creamy, sugary.
Yeah, because I'm not bitter like you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the next one here, Colombian hot dogs. This looks like a birthday party.
Is that candy?
I don't know. It looks like a birthday party on top of a hot dog. This looks like one of the best things ever. New York and Chicago are known for their hot dogs, but Miami, however, has the Perro Caliente, Colombia's answer to the globally beloved street food. Find it at Mao Colombian Fast Food, where customers come for boiled hot dogs nestled in soft buns and piled high with Colombians' favorite condiments, including crushed potato chips. So that's probably what some of that is. Pineapple sauce, mustard, ketchup, and pink sauce, which is a ketchup mayo hybrid. While those are the usual toppings for these kinds of franks, Mao lets guests customize toppings from a lengthy selection of options. Think sausage, bacon, lettuce.
There you go, man,
this is like my hot dog paradise. Colombian hot dogs, going to Mao Colombian Fast Food. Get you some, because the picture of it looks like a birthday cake hot dog.
Yeah.
It just looks amazing.
Pastel.
Yeah. Oh, love it. And then the next one here, guava and cheese pastelitos. Connoting excessive enthusiasm or an absolute obsession, the word mania indicates a level of madness that is generally not considered a positive unless it comes to food. Little Havana's Pastelmania offers a crazy array of Cuban pasteles, or pastries prepared by baked good fanatics. Flavors include sweet and savory, with options such as coconut, pineapple, meat, crab, and even pizza, which is filled with mozzarella and ham. For a pastelito that is the ultimate taste of Miami, go for the guava and cheese version, which looks interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The gigantic pastry is stuffed so full of its sweet tropical filling that the cream cheesy fruit mixture oozes out upon first flaky bite. Yeah, looks interesting. And then another one here, spiny lobster. Locals pull out their diving gear in droves when spiny lobster season comes around, August through March. Same time as, you know,
There's been a lot of things.
But yeah. the clams. Clams,
right.
Wasn't it? I think it's the clam. No, it's kumquats.
Right.
Yeah. January, and then it comes around. Anyway, so many. But get you some of that from Spiny Lobster. Very, you know, like individual look, Spiny Lobster.
Mm-hmm.
But on Wednesday nights, there is a market, and it offers the crustacean-focused meal deals at lower-than-usual prices for what it calls Florida Lobster Fest. Guyland's goal for the special is to draw attention to the local industry of Spiny Lobster. But most experts head to cods and capers.
Hmm.
And then the Mamie Shake. Mamie. My grandpa's dog was named Mamie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Mamie. For more than two decades, El Palacios de los Juegos has served exemplary Cuban dishes and fantastic fresh juices served in laid-back digs. Translated to Juice Palace, this little shop lives up to its name with a regal selection of fruits that are hard to find in much of the United States. Sample rare delicacies like guava, papaya, rambutan, passion fruit, and sugar cane. The Miami specialty, however, is Mamie, a tropical fruit with citrusy, slightly tart flavor, somewhat similar to raspberry.
Hmm.
It's served in juice form as well as in Cuban-style milkshake, batido de Mamie, a sweet, frothy, tangy, and not overly sugary refreshment.
Yeah.
It kind of just looks like Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it's like very orange. Yeah,
very orange Kool-Aid. And then the last one here, roti. Yeah. Mm. Large population of Caribbean immigrants, Florida has adopted its own unique culinary canon that includes and adapts dishes from across the islands. Conch has become an obvious mainstay. Oxtail stew is another staple, and curry shows up on fine dining and cheap and cheerful menus alike. For more than two decades, Joy's Roti Delight in Lauderhill has churned out East meets West Indian-style fare for spice-loving South Floridians and Caribbean expats. This is the place to get buttery roti, essentially the Trinidadian version of a wrap.
Hmm.
So, yeah. That is, like, the full extent of Florida.
That was a lot.
It was.
But it all looked really good.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Florida, big place in, what was it, Jacksonville? That was supposed to be the first Hollywood, right? Yeah. Hold on a second. We gotta Google this. Hold on a second. Google the first Hollywood, Florida. There we go. Hold on a second. Yeah, Florida in the golden age of silent films. Jacksonville, Florida, was the king of the infant film industry. It was devastated by fire in 1901.
That is interesting.
Yeah. It was similar to Los Angeles, right? And it was on the East Coast, so it was easy for people from, you know, New York to get to. So there's a little history for you. Florida is just, it is full of history.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of weird stuff compared to like what most other states, you know, have.
Yeah.
You've got, and then the Everglades, which are just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy state. Well, you're thinking future visit to Florida, and what are your going to be your first ones you're going to?
First ones of what?
Of the food.
First foods I'm going to?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you land, are you going to be like, I want some gator tail? Or are you going to be like...
Well, I would order...
Ooh. Okay. Yeah.
I'd probably order something with crab. Sounds really good.
Yeah.
Definitely have to hit up my sweet tooth and get key lime pie.
Mm.
And I'd like to try that citrus whip or whatever that was called. Citrus swirl.
Yeah, citrus swirl.
Because that looks incredible.
Yeah.
I think most things on here, if not all of it, I would try it. It all sounds really good.
I think I'd go probably towards like Dade City, out towards St. Joseph, and I'd tell everyone in that town that you used kumquat as an insult for years.
I don't think they'll care.
I think they will.
They'll be like, I don't know I
think if there's anybody from Dade City or St. Joseph that wants to contact the pod,
Culinary Combo
Pod at gmail.com, I apologize.
I'm gonna have to go into hiding. Everything.
No, you're not. It's kumquats. They're delicious. You'll just eat kumquats.
I didn't say I don't like them.
Right, because you've never had them because you always thought like that they were awful and insulting your whole life. yeah, kumquats. Have some, people. Actually, I did watch a video. I'm going to post it on our Facebook and Twitter. Korean food. They use kumquats and they make a fermented syrup from kumquats. Very interesting little video. Easy to make, but creates a very citrusy, sugary, good syrup. Yeah. But no, definitely, I want to go out towards Florida. I got to see my fam out there. Florida, one of a kind. Obviously, we got to figure out where we're headed to next. Mm-hmm. And so where do you think we're going to land here? What do you think?
I'll go with Minnesota.
Minnesota. That's actually a pretty good guess. I'm going to guess. So last time we were in...
Wasn't it Oregon?
Yeah, we were in Oregon, and then we went to Florida. So, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that it's going to go to Texas.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay.
Spinning. Pow. Where are we going? Where are we going? It's spinning and a zooming in, and it's going to Hawaii.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah, Hawaii.
That's somewhere else I want to go.
Yeah.
Never been.
Been wanting to go for some time.
Yeah.
So we will see everybody next time in Hawaii. Thank you, Kaylee, for calling everybody a kumquat and joining the pod.
I'm never sitting on this again.
Yep. Nope. We enjoyed it. I appreciate it. Thank you. Yep. And we will see everybody next time.
Bye.
Everybody, see you next time on One of a Kind.
See ya.
Yeah.
Bye.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.